this weekend at Bristol. The U.S. Open continues on. And again, high school, college, and the NFL. We get all the football and all the other sports I just mentioned. We'll get to that today on Sports 180. Heather, good Friday afternoon. How are you?
I am doing great. I don't know if you've been outside lately, Josh. There's a little hint of crispness in the air. It's beautiful. It's sunny. I mean, we just have the perfect weather coming our way for a nice little U.S. Open weekend and to just get some things done around the house. I'm pumped.
Yes, we are very excited as this is the final non-Tennessee SEC football Friday as well. This time next week, we'll be talking about Tennessee's opener against South Carolina and the rest of the SEC joining up with the other college football teams that are in action.
Yeah, and I'm ready for it. Bring it on. I was having a conversation with my mom earlier today. She was like, so when does Tennessee actually play? And we were going over, you know, how many people are going to be in the stands and if there's going to be tailgating and what's that going to look like. And so the fact that we can have some real conversations and some great news for Tennessee coming out on this Friday, you know, there's just a lot to be excited about as we're 1 week away.
So why don't we get to it as we take a look around the sports world.
The biggest news, the main stories, the headlines that have everyone talking. It's time to take a look around the sports world.
And that Tennessee news you referenced, Jeremy Pruitt saying yesterday that the NCAA has granted the waiver to Cade Mays on his appeal to be able to play this fall. Now he waits for the SEC to give approval. What is your level of concern or fear that that will not happen, as that is the final hurdle? The NCAA has said yes. Now Cade needs the SEC to say yes to the transfer from Georgia to Tennessee.
I feel like with the climate that surrounds this year, because COVID-19, because eligibility is not going to count, the SEC would not do themselves any favors by denying this transfer. I see it from the other side. They don't want a rash of in-state transfers just happening every single year, year in and year out. But I don't think this has to be a precedent-setting year either. I think there are a lot of exceptions to be made. So I think he clears this last hurdle. I've been confident all along that he was going to play for Tennessee this year. And so I'm still riding on that. And then when I got the news yesterday, it gave me that little Pat Ryan jolt. Oh, are we feeling a little 80%-ish right now for a win at South Carolina?
You're going to be at 7-3 by this time next week for Tennessee. 7-3 is going to be your record prediction.
I would love that. There would have to be just something happened. You know, I'm still feeling good about Georgia, especially with Newman. Has he opted back in yet, or is he still an opt-out? We're good to go there.
Still
right?
An opt-out.
Still an opt-out. Yep. Okay. You know, things are changing for Ohio State players. I didn't know if Newman wanted to opt back in. But no, I'm loving it and I'm feeling good, but there would have to be something else happen to one of the big time teams in the league that Tennessee needs to hurdle for me to go 7-3.
Okay, we'll get back to that. Tennessee with five players on the coaches' preseason all SEC teams, Trey Smith and Brent Simaglia first team, Henry Tuoto and Wanya Morris second team, and Bryce Thompson on the third team. Interesting thing about Wanya Morris is I'm not sure that he's going to be starting for Tennessee next week, but he's second team All-SEC. So a lot of hype for the talented player who's missed a good amount of time in fall camp, had surgery in the offseason as well. But five Tennessee players, no Cade Mays. I have to imagine that him being ineligible at the time that the vote would have taken place, that had to be the factor there. They did three teams, first, second, and third team. Cade would definitely be a preseason All-SEC guy if not for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that factored into it. I know we're going to talk about it later. What does Tennessee's postseason All-SEC resume look like? How many guys will be known for what they did on the field this year? I thought everybody on paper, I was confused a little bit about Wanya too. I think that falls into the hype category and the potential category. I mean, came in obviously highly recruited. People have a lot of expectations for him. So we'll see if he's able to make a big jump this sophomore year. But even if he falls short, you got to imagine that Cade Mays will at least get Tennessee their five. And then who else could be on there? I think it's fun to think about.
Yeah, we can talk about that. Cole Kubelik, when he was doing his lineman rankings, he had Wanya among the top five tackles in the conference several weeks ago. Cole with the SEC Network. So we'll talk a little bit more about some individual accolades that could come Tennessee's way as the season goes along. Giannis got some accolades added to the list, a second MVP award for the Milwaukee Bucks star.
We'll have a cool pop-up fact about Giannis coming up later on in the show, so I'm not going to give that away here. I just have the simple question, does the best player in the NBA typically get bounced early in the playoffs?
Ooh. Not typically.
Just a question. Yeah. I was just asking.
We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. What's the latest with the U.S. Open here on a Friday afternoon?
Well, I just commend you for your excellent selecting choice. You know, Justin Thomas with a killer round yesterday, but Xander Schauffele has made some moves today. Now, he's even through 14. He's tied for third right now on the leaderboard. You've got Roy McIlroy that's in the mix along with Justin Thomas, just a couple of shots back. My boy, Dustin Johnson, he is actually 2 under through today. He's 2 under today. I think he's through 11, through 13, and jumped up to tied for 22nd. So Dustin getting back into the mix after shooting a 73 yesterday, just a bad first day for him. But the course looks beautiful. Doesn't look like there's too much wind during this morning round, and people are shooting pretty low right now.
Tiger Woods set to tee off at about 1:30. He goes into the day at 3 over. The current projected cut line is 3 over. So we'll see how Tiger plays this afternoon with the U.S. Open. The Celtics played really well for a while last night, and then they played really poorly. And the Miami Heat came back from a big deficit in the second half to win the game. It's now 2-0 Miami. There was a report after the game, not even really reporting because people are standing there hearing it, but Marcus Smart not happy, yelling some obscenities, and went a little wild in the locker room. But I would also say Marcus Smart's the guy that's trying to go out there and fight to help them win, and that wasn't there for the Celtics. There's a play. They're down by 3, about a minute and a half to go. A jumper for Miami. You have 4 Celtics around, and a Miami Heat player comes in and jumps in for the rebound because not one Celtic went after the ball. That was with the game essentially on the line. So Boston down 0-2 as the Western Conference Finals begin tonight with the Nuggets and Lakers.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, Miami winning with defense right now. They are playing really good defense. You got to like what Spoelstra is doing with this team. And Boston, I mean, not to say they can't come back. Don't forget, they'll get Hayward at some point during this series. We'll see how long it takes him to get back into peak shape, because that's also going to be a factor. But they've definitely dug themselves a monster hole to dig out of.
It is NHL Stanley Cup final time. Joel Silverberg with the Lightning against the Stars.
And they've been knocking on the door for a while. They made the finals 5 years ago. They were in the conference finals a couple years ago. They get the overtime winner last night. They eliminate the Islanders in game 6. They've played 6 overtime games in these playoffs. Mike Emmerich said last night on NBC they've played the equivalent of 20 games despite only playing in 16. So they are going to play the Stars tomorrow in game 1. So the Lightning looking, both teams looking for their first cup in a long time, the Lightning for the first time since 04, the Stars for the first time since 1999.
So the Stanley Cup Final, NBA Conference Finals are going on. College football tonight, Memphis and Houston. That one was postponed, so you get Houston and Baylor tomorrow. We do still have Coastal Carolina and Campbell tonight. So focus a little more on high school football, no offense to the others. And then, I mean, Coastal's coming off the win against a Big 12 team, so don't mean to slide them. And then games that will be of note tomorrow, I would say, I think that Houston-Baylor game's kind of interesting. It's a noon kick on Fox. You have Miami and Louisville. I think that's probably your best of the weekend. It's tomorrow night on ABC. Wake Forest State could be interesting. Georgia Tech and UCF on the college football docket. Week 2 of the NFL kicked off last night with the Bengals and Browns. Did they put up potentially the best game of the weekend? I don't know that it's going to be that, but you got a bunch of points, and Baker Mayfield and the Browns get the win. 61 pass attempts for Joe Burrow.
Yes.
So the rookie is already being asked to do a lot. I don't know what it's going to mean for the franchise long term, but I think they've found their guy. I think Burrow is going to be a really good quarterback in the NFL for a long time.
Yeah, would like to see Joe Mixon get going a little bit more efficiently than what he showed last night. But yeah, Joe Burrow, somebody get some ice for his arm. 61 pass attempts, that was a monster. But hey, we called it yesterday. Those Bengals covered, Josh Ward.
That's right. A little back door for the Bengals. So +6, take it to the bank. That was a lock yesterday, all the way until the end. Sean Wade opting back in at Ohio State. On Monday, he opted out. Today, he has opted back in at cornerback. We'll see what happens with Wyatt Davis, the talented offensive lineman. Also, something to pay attention to here, the standout receiver at Minnesota appears to want to return to play for the Gophers this season now that they're going to play. He signed with an agent, so we'll see if some exceptions will be made for players who thought, maybe there's not going to be a season this fall. I'm just going to go ahead and get ready for the draft. and now there is a season to play. So we'll see how that plays out. But Sean Wade, who opted out at the beginning of the week, has come back to play for the Buckeyes now that the season is on.
Yeah, I was unaware of the Minnesota player, but I was actually going to say that in regards to Sean Wade, if you made any side deals or took any money, give it back really quick and let's just, you know, call it a day. Because, I mean, you know, plans have drastically changed since he decided to go ahead and opt out. So hopefully there's no hurdles standing in his way to rejoin the team. You know, Ohio State is thrilled with the opt-ins. Justin Fields, you know, has been active on Twitter about his team. So he's really pumped. But the right move, I thought, also by Sean Wade. You're going to get a lot more attention playing for Ohio State than maybe doing some of these satellite 7-on-7 things that have been rumored to possibly still be happening this fall.
Florida Atlantic, Georgia Southern, that has been postponed because of positive tests. So you have Charlotte, North Carolina, that has been postponed. Those are on your postponement list for week 3 in college football. We'll continue to look ahead to this upcoming weekend. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the Cade Mays news. It's not official that he can play next week, but they did clear an important hurdle, and that is the NCAA giving the clearance for Cade to play. Now it's up to the SEC to allow the same. We'll talk about that coming up here on Sports 180-656-9900 for you to join us. Barrett Salee of CBS Sports stops by at 12:30. With Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg, I'm Josh Ward. You're listening to FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Thank you for being with us on Sports 180 on this Friday afternoon. Remember to download the WNML app. You can listen to any show, any interview, any podcast in the podcast section of the WNML app, also on Apple Podcasts. And we have a busy afternoon ahead. Barrett Salee of CBS Sports is going to stop by at 12:30. We'll talk some college football with him, get his reaction to the Cade Mays news, which is that the NCAA is going to allow him to play. The SEC now just has to clear him to play, with the opener being 8 days away. We're going to talk to Will Shelton of Game Day on Rocky Top coming up at 1:30. I'll be really curious to see where fan reaction is to the Cade Mays news and where fan anticipation is for the start of the season. Austin Dillon at 2 o'clock. We'll talk to the driver of the number 3 car as he gets ready for racing at Bristol this weekend. And Fat Jack at 2:30, and we'll run our picks by him as we'll have our best bets at the end of the hour. So Fat Jack coming up at 2:30. It's a busy Friday afternoon here on Sports 180. And Heather, I somewhat joked last segment that my big prediction for Tennessee season is that you are going to predict they go 7-3 by kickoff 7:30 Saturday night. But the Cade Mays news is significant if the SEC also clears him to play, because while he is just one player, he is one literally big player and also one of the most talented players on the team. And you know, just could have a huge impact on the offensive line. An offensive line with Trey Smith and Cade Mays leading the way, you would have a chance, I think, to be good with just about anybody else. But then you have other talented, now more experienced players than you've had over the last couple of years. And it really adds to what the potential could be for Tennessee's offensive line. So obviously you needed the NCAA clearance before we could have this conversation. That happened, and that's good for Tennessee.
Yeah, and the clearance news is huge, and it does impact the overall offense. I mean, we talked to Cole Kublik himself when he was saying, you know, looking at it with Cade Mays playing, he had Tennessee as one of the top three offensive line units in the conference. And we were talking about, you know, how valuable is that in the win-loss column, especially if you're talking about going from one of the bottom four in the SEC from a year ago to one of the top four this year, and how that can dramatically change the conversation around Jarrett Garantano and the offense. You know, what's Eric Gray able to do behind this line? Ty Chandler, you know, breaking in those younger wide receivers, giving Garantano more time to throw. So I think the potential is there. The reason why I'm not set on just like changing my prediction, I think 6-4 is optimistic this year, because there is just some weird stuff going on with COVID. You know, how do you account for all of that? How do you make sense of it? Well, you got to factor in some sort of margin of error at that point. But I think what it does in my mind is it solidifies the games that I already thought Tennessee had the upper hand in. The games like South Carolina, the games like Missouri. I even think Kentucky is more winnable now. I give Tennessee an even better shot, even though I had them beating Kentucky, an even better shot with Cade Mays on the offensive line. I don't think it's changed the conversation in my mind yet about knocking off a Georgia even though that's the one I feel best about, but like a Georgia, Alabama, or a Florida.
The Kentucky game is one we've talked about a lot. It's in between the Georgia and Alabama games. If we're going to talk about the all-SEC teams that come out with Trey Smith on the first team, and I think Cade would have been probably on the first or second team. I mean, you put him in over Wanya Morris, right? I mean, just looking at teammates, Cade's going to rank ahead of Wanya, and Wanya is a second-team guy as voted by the coaches. Look at Kentucky. Kentucky has two first-teamers on the offensive line and a second-team offensive line selection. Three offensive linemen on the first two teams for the Kentucky Wildcats. You play that team in between a couple of big games against Georgia on the road and Alabama. And I'm not sitting here to say, uh-oh, Kentucky's going to beat Tennessee. I do think it's one that Tennessee better be prepared for along the line of scrimmage. That's where a lot of the game is, I think, going to be decided. That's often the case, but I think it especially applies here. There's been a lot of challenging comments from Jeremy Pruitt toward his defensive line. And that's why going up against Georgia week three, it's a retooled offensive line, but a talented one. And then Kentucky and then Alabama, which probably has the best offensive line in the SEC. I think four of their five starters are preseason all SEC on the offensive line. So pretty good. And that starts with Alex Leatherwood, but Landon Dickerson's a guy that has gotten some first team love there as well. The Vols' defensive line is really going to be tested early on, and Tennessee's offensive line, if it's as good as many people believe that it can be, that's what I think could allow Tennessee to make a jump up to being more competitive with the really good teams, the Georgia, Alabama, Florida list in the SEC.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and that's been a huge point of emphasis and major recruiting focus for Jeremy Pruitt during the offseason, is bolstering not only the offensive line and pulling them up from just the doldrums, but also boosting that defensive line. And, you know, the defense is so near and dear to his heart. I mean, that's his baby, even though I know he's more of a secondary coach. But still, he wants to see the defense really outperform. And don't forget, they also challenged that defensive line and several of the players at this same point of time last season. After a couple of games, you know, they were talking about, we've got to get more production out of the defensive line. And they challenged, you know, guys like a Kevon Bennett and some of the others, and you saw them step up and get better every single week. So is it a little bit of a motivational tool right now for Jeremy Pruitt? I think some of that could factor in.
I don't think that's lacking. And, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, I think he was really proud about how the team improved and the development he saw last year. But when we talk about record predictions and everything else and just how you perform against Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, I promise nobody has higher expectations of how they should at least play than Tennessee's head coach. So it's exciting. It's 8 days away from Tennessee against South Carolina, and that's the game they need to be focusing on. This isn't a one-game-at-a-time thing. It's just, let's see how you do against South Carolina, and then we'll get to the Georgia conversation. But if you can go beat South Carolina for a second consecutive season, come back home and beat Missouri in your home opener on October 3rd, you're off and running. You're 2-0, and then let's see if Heather's guarantee that Tennessee beats Georgia ends up being right.
Also, we need to point out, with Barrett Slee coming up next, you know, he broke down the All-SEC coaches selection. Tennessee plays all three All-SEC quarterbacks as selected by the coaches. Florida's Kyle Trask is first team, Texas A&M's Kellen Mond is second team, and Bo Nix coming in on third team. So, bam, you get to check that box, too, as playing the three best quarterbacks as said by the coaches this season.
As we've all said, it's an easy schedule for Tennessee in 2020. We'll discuss with Barrett Salee of CBSSports.com coming up next. Joel Silverberg has a Midday Sports Minute for you right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. We are with you until 3 o'clock. And we are pleased to go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And welcome to the show, Barrett Slee. You can read his work at CBSSports.com. Find him on CBS Sports HQ as well, making picks at Sportsline. He's all over the place. And, Barrett, we appreciate the time as always. Yesterday, news came from Tennessee that the NCAA has cleared Cade Mays to play this fall. Now he needs approval from the SEC. So I guess two things here. One, would you anticipate that the SEC is going to clear Cade to play as a transfer from within the conference? If that does happen, what's the impact for Tennessee for Cade to be able to play?
Firstly, yeah, I do think that he'll get approval from the SEC at this point. I understand undergraduates have to have special circumstances, but a lawsuit coupled with the uncertainty of the season seems to be enough. I mean, I would hope that's enough. So, and usually when the NCAA has this when an appeal is granted, it's in conjunction with the SEC and what the SEC will do, or any conference for that matter. So, I think he'll be there, and it's huge. Tennessee has three or four coaches, all SEC offensive linemen on the three teams. That's going to be awesome this year. It's going to be so important for Tennessee to have that kind of stability going into the season, because you'd think there wouldn't be much of an acclimation process. So, yeah, it's enormous for Tennessee. There's no doubt. But lastly, is there a reason you guys came out of break playing American Idiot when I came on? Because that does seem appropriate.
No, purely coincidental, Barrett.
I can't speak for Joel, who's producing there, Barrett. I would not even attempt to.
Well, Joel Silverberg, I'm coming after you, man.
I love it. Hey, Barrett, I know you've been bullish on Tennessee this year with the win-loss column. Does the Cade Mays news do anything to change your predictions, maybe up the ante a little bit for Tennessee, or had you already factored him in to your plans or to Tennessee's plans when you were making your predictions?
Well, I had pretty much already factored him in, because we made our initial picks back in early on. It was before he got denied, so it really doesn't change all that much for me. But it certainly, gives the possibility of an upset, greater likelihood. And that's just that's part of this deal. So, before the COVID shutdown, I had them beating Florida in week four. But moving that game back, I think, really eliminated that possibility, because, Florida will be able to figure out its sea legs and have a little bit more of an idea of what kind of team it actually is. So, it doesn't really change all that much, but certainly does increase the likelihood of an upset.
Barrett Salee is with us, CBSSports.com. How does the Big Ten's decision this week affect how you think this college football season plays out, and how the playoff might look, especially with Ohio State looking to get some opt-ins back and Sean Wade and Wyatt Davis?
Yeah, I got Sean Wade back, and it sounds like Wyatt's trying to go through some motions a little bit trickier for him. Yep. It totally changes it, because I had Florida in as the number four seed even after losing the SEC championship game, and that's gone. I mean, I would say Ohio State would be in at this point. So, that's assuming Ohio State, really, or any comp, gets enough of a resume, assuming games are postponed and moved. How many games do you get? I think that debate came up the other day with Ohio State, but, the same argument can be said for the SEC. Any school can have a COVID outbreak and cause a postponement or a cancellation. So right now, I've moved Florida out. I put Ohio State back in. But I think throughout all of this, the caveat is, what does the resume look like? And there are way more factors this year than maybe we've had in years past.
Barrett, my question going back to the coaches all SEC preseason list, when you look at it, last year it was kind of a stretch to get to the number three guy, and people had penciled in Joe Burrow just as a sort of an afterthought, thinking that Tua was going to be the best player in the SEC. But looking at it this year, who could be that dark horse in the quarterback race?
Yeah, Bo Nix was 13 this year, so maybe history repeats itself. No, it might be him. Kellen Mond, I think we've sort of seen what he is. It's just, what you're going to get. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but, I think his upside maybe isn't what people thought it'd be when he signed with Texas A&M. So I'd say it's Bo Nix. They're going to give him more of the offense. They're going to give him more options in the passing game. Slant routes and passing routes over the middle have been basically non-existent in Gus Malzahn's offense the last couple of years. And really, that's a staple of what Chad Morris wants to do. And I think we always have the debate of, is Gus actually going to take his hands off the offense and all this other stuff? Well, typically the answer is no, he won't. But with Chad Morris to show, the answer might be yes, and it's certainly more likely to be yes. So I would say Bo Nix, because, he's already got a nice, foundation. And then moving forward, I think the offense will be much more suited to him, and he'll get more of a responsibility, in the running game this year. They don't have a superstar at running back, but I think they've got an effective room, but that will definitely be aided by by Bo Nix if Bo Nix is able to run and given the opportunity to run more, because that dude can run. He's a really good athlete.
We're talking to Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com. What did you think of the news that Colin Hill, not Ryan Helinski, will be the starter at quarterback for South Carolina, and just where things stand for the Gamecocks a week away from the start of the season?
Wasn't terribly surprised. It seemed like it was going that direction for a little while now, which is, you know, I think on the surface a little strange, because Ryan Helinski was there. He was the incumbent, and he came in with a lot of hype. He was a highly touted kid, but with such a limited offseason, yeah, it's nice to be the incumbent like Ryan Helinski, but you're not the incumbent in that offense. You know, Colin Hill is, because he was with Mike Bobo at Colorado State. So, you know, I certainly get it. But it does sound like Colin Hill flat out beat out Ryan Helinski. It wasn't a situation where Helinski just struggled mightily and they have to go with somebody else. So, you know, surprised, yeah. Discouraged with South Carolina, just as discouraged as I was before. But no, not surprised at all.
How excited are you that we only have to wait one more week to see SEC action? Because I'm hungry for it, Barrett.
I am too. You know, it was sloppy last week. You know, North Carolina looked good in the second or in the fourth quarter, but man, you saw a lot of sloppy football. I mean, Georgia Tech was the one exception. They were sloppy, but I mean, it was better than anybody had hoped. And, you know, that was the one game where I just kind of found myself drawn into it, because you had Jeff Sims, who, you know, I think Jeff Collins, and talking to Jeff Collins, thought that he could do what he did against Florida State, you know, in the offseason, because they did get a few practices in, but I don't think anybody expected him to do what he did, you know, that well, because even on the two picks, he drove them down the field and looked as sharp as a veteran. So that one to me was nice. But, yeah, I'm excited to see what happens in the SEC. The 10-game conference schedule, I think, just adds so much to it, because in the end, when you really think about, you know, what all we have, we basically have this a better version of the regular season with fewer out-of-conference games, obviously zero, but with, you know, you take away Charleston Southern, you take away the Citadel, whatever, you know, this is going to be pretty exciting. So I'm excited to see what happens. I think it'll set the tone moving forward to, you know, expand to 9 conference games. Wish we'd go to 10, but I doubt that'll happen.
Yeah, with you. Before you go, is Miami-Louisville the best college football game of the weekend, or would you go a different route?
Oh, I think so, 100%. You know, I don't know how many people watched Louisville last year, but Mykael Cunningham can flat out play. And then Javian Hawkins is a solid running back. But, you know, when you have Tutu Atwell and Dez Fitzpatrick both vying to be the top receiver on any given Saturday, that's a pretty explosive offense. And then, you know, Miami, with what happened against UAB, I just felt like that was a diet version of Derrick King. And knowing Rhett Lashley the way I do, I think that he probably saved some things, some really interesting creative things for week two, knowing that really they could handle UAB, I wouldn't say with ease, because it wasn't necessarily easy, but they knew they could get them and really didn't need to impress anybody. So I'm really excited to see what happens there. That's going to be a fun one.
Hey, and I said before you go, but the actual before you go, 10 games to go in the regular season, thoughts on where things are for the Atlanta Braves heading into the weekend with the Mets in this final week and a half of the regular season?
Well, great to get Freed back. And, you know, if Ian Anderson continues to do what he did and Kyle Wright does what he did last time out, a little bit more comfortable. But I've kind of given up on hoping for the World Series. I just want to win a postseason series. And I think they can do it. But look, if you score, if you have the offense that the Braves do, you don't have to get a whole lot out of your starting pitching. And even though it's been pretty bad lately, I still think you can find enough. The one thing that does scare me, though, is the playoff schedule being changed to, you know, a normal style regular season schedule. In regular years, I'd be all for that. But, you know, this year, that means you're going to have to go through the starting rotation basically the same way you did during the regular season, which when you get to 4 and 5 in the Braves rotation, that's when you're starting to pray a little bit.
Yeah, that's when you might need those 29 runs to pop back up again for the Braves lineup.
Would be
which could happen. Don't roll it out. At Barrett Salee, follow him on Twitter and check out his work, CBSSports.com, his picks at Sportsline.com as well. Hey, Barrett, enjoy this weekend. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks, y'all. You too.
Barrett Salee on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Yeah, final week and a half of the regular season. 10 games to go for the Braves, 9 to go for your Rays, which are 3.5 in front of the Yankees in the AL East.
Okay, how are you feeling about your postseason prediction of, you had Yankees-Dodgers with the Dodgers winning?
That I did. Still very much in play. The Dodgers would have to be the favorites, right? And the Yankees, yeah. they're in the mix. They've won 8 straight, so that's the bounce back you look for. So yeah, I'm not going to change my pick. Dodgers over Yankees. I'll just change it when it ends up being wrong and one of them gets knocked out first.
Okay, I like that. Just go down with the ship like the little violinist.
Yeah, like I'm no longer predicting the Clippers will win the NBA title. I've changed that prediction.
Yeah, yeah. And you even said when we were picking Game 7, you go, well, I've picked the Clippers. Why change it now? It's like, so you could be right. That was the correct answer. You should have changed it, but we didn't.
Well, they should have won. It's not my fault that's the biggest tank team we've ever seen with that level of talent. What a just abomination. Nation. All right, we'll come back. Final segment of this hour. We'll hit the face-off. Joel Silverberg sets us up there, and then we'll continue the conversation heading into the weekend. All the sports, we'll cover them right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. We'll hit the face-off coming up in just a moment. Catching up on a couple of items. It looks like Buccaneers wide receiver Chris Godwin is still not out of the concussion protocol, according to Adam Schefter. So currently he is doubtful for Sunday's game against the Panthers. That's something to pay attention to as the Bucs in week two are, of course, looking to bounce back. And if he clears protocol, it does not guarantee that he will play. He'll be listed as questionable tomorrow if doctors do clear him, according to Schefter. But Panthers, Buccaneers, one to watch this weekend in the NFL.
Yeah, that's, it's hard to get a grasp on just how many assumptions or things you can take away from week one. I still, and I think I'm even rooting harder for Tom Brady now after I felt like he just endured a lot of criticism. I mean, that was a Saints team that was really good. Obviously, the Bucks have only been working together for a short amount of time. So I'm hoping that Brady has a better showing in week two. The pick six was not pretty. I mean, don't get me wrong. That was a really ugly play, and you don't want to see that happen, and you definitely don't want it to become the norm. But I feel like everybody has just completely disregarded him after talking about him for 4 months of being, taking the Bucks to an NFC front runner team. So I want to see what week two has in store for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I have not punted on Tom Brady quite yet. I would still allow it more than 1 week against one of the best teams in the NFL on the road.
Yeah, especially with one of his top threats. And now you've got some issues with Godwin going into this week. But Mike Evans was questionable all week long. Now, of course, the team knows. They've got a better idea of if he's going to play or not. But that there was still a question mark, at least around that hamstring and how durable he was going to be during week one. So a little bit of adversity for the Bucs to overcome. But I'm anxious to see what it looks like this weekend. This is a much better chance for a win than it was versus the Saints.
Yeah, I think that's right. And by the way, I mentioned on the road, I know you don't have fans there, so it's not typical, but still, they'll be back home in terms of their just typical environment. I would think that would help. But what also would help would be having your two best wide receivers at 100%, and that is not the case right now. So here we are, already making excuses for the golden boy Tom Brady. That's what we do here on Sports 180. Let's hit today's face-off.
You want some? Come get some.
Head to head, toe to toe. Let's go one-on-one with today's face-off.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Presented by Fort Sanders Health and Fitness Center.
Are you ready?
Let's get this mother crock.
Alrighty, Joel, what do you have for us?
Will the Vols have more than two first-team All-SEC selections at the end of this season?
They will if we include special teams, and we probably should, right? Because that's included in the list coming out last night. So I'll say Trey Smith, I will say Brent Simaglia, and Henry To'oto'o at linebacker.
I say that will at least be the case, and then there could be a possibility of a Cade Mays or somebody else working their way onto the first team All-SEC. So I agree with everything Josh said, and I would maybe add in a Cade Mays, possibly a Wanya Morris, but definitely To'oto'o in the mix as well.
Who's your pick to win game one of the Western Conference Finals tonight?
They've been sitting, they have been waiting, and they've probably been shooting a lot of threes in practice there, Josh Ward. I think LeBron and the Lakers take game one tonight.
So game one so far has not gone well for the Lakers. Didn't against Portland, didn't against the Houston Rockets. They have been sitting and waiting, but can you get a little bit lax? The Nuggets have a little momentum. I do think the Lakers win the series. I'll take the Nuggets to win game one. How about going out on a big limb here? And I'll take the Nuggets to win game one and keep the trend. Although they've gotten off to not great starts, Lakers the same, so something's got to give.
Is Giannis Antetokounmpo the best player in the NBA?
82 games at a time, yes. During the regular season, he is your top player. Because the way that he plays, his energy, the inability to do anything about him. But the sport is largely based on what happens the postseason. And I think it's still between LeBron and Kawhi. LeBron's probably the better player to galvanize the team. Kawhi, just what he's built to do, I think is probably the best.
I think Giannis is definitely a top five player. And don't get me wrong, like, his offense is great. His defense definitely needs to be recognized. Defensive player of the year. I mean, he is an incredible player, but you have to factor in the postseason when you're talking about the best player in the NBA. So I'm going to say he's top five, but he's not number one.
Today is National Cheeseburger Day. What's the best style of cheeseburger?
Cheeseburger in paradise, right? That would be my favorite style. Maybe go a little Hawaiian style. But no, I think a straight up cheeseburger, have the lettuce, the tomatoes, and the pickles, and enjoy no matter what your setting is. I love a good cheeseburger. It's my number one guilty pleasure.
Sir, if you're going to go with a pretty typical approach, I would say a bacon cheeseburger. You got the burger, the cheese, and bacon on top. If you want to get kind of wild, I would say my favorite burger that I'm going to be able to find is the bison burger at Stock and Barrel. So really kind of crank it up a notch. I would go with a good bison burger.
What's your best bet this weekend?
Going back to the ACC, Heather, it got me a winner last week. I thought about Louisville again, but that's a close line. I like both teams in Louisville and Miami, so that's not where I'm going. I'm going with Boston College plus the 6. Now, opening things up, it's a little bit scary. Duke had the game against Notre Dame, but I'm going to go BC plus 6. I think they have a shot to win the game.
BC plus 6. Let's see if I can win some money off your bet. I'm also going to go. I'm feeling a couple of bets today. I love the Texans Ravens. Yeah, the over-under is set at 50. I would take the under. I think the Ravens are going to score as many points as they want in the first half and then kind of cruise. I don't think the Texans are going to put up much of a scoring effort on the Ravens. Also, though, I picked the Lakers earlier. I like the Lakers to also cover tonight the -7.
Ooh, okay.
All right, Heather gets the win.
Can't touch this.
I'm going to ask that, Jack.
LeBron train. So Lakers, we're going to, is that what we're doing here, Heather? You're parlaying the Lakers -7, and then you're going, did you say under on the
under,
Ravens?
Yeah, Texans Ravens. And it's not because I don't think the Ravens can score. I think they're going to win the game in the first half and just, you know, run the ball in the second half. And I don't think, I mean, do you think the Texans offense, they've got a lot of things to work on. They looked like a team that just has lost their identity. Despite Deshaun Watson being amazing, they don't have much of an offensive identity right now.
That's fair to ask. It was not present against KC. I've got some real concerns for Houston. I'm not the only one, I know.
Yeah, I'm but severely doubting my playoff.
When we made our picks, I didn't have them in the postseason this year. I was contradicting myself, though. I did not put them in the postseason while also saying Houston was one of the under-the-radar teams to pay attention to. I paid attention and then crossed them off.
Well, they could be one of those teams that does go 8-8 and doesn't get into the playoffs. Who knows? But it's not looking good. The Ravens defense is very good. Now, I know the Texans, they'll be able to come up with some stops on defense, but they just can't score with Lamar Jackson and that crew.
Two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, though, going head-to-head for a second straight week. Last week it was Mahomes and Watson. This week, Lamar and Deshaun Watson. We'll continue here on Sports 180. Heather gets the win in the face-off to close out the week. We'll continue looking ahead to the weekend. We'll catch you up on what's going on, talk more about Tennessee's offensive line and the offensive potential for the Vols this upcoming season. 656-9900 if you would like to join us. Tiger Watch begins 30 minutes from right now. We continue here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.